of our May 20th City Council meeting. Our first item will be to turn time over to Ted Knowlton for the pledge and a thought.
Thank you, Mayor. Sometimes I'm asked, I was asked last week, what do you like about local government, compared to, let's say, state government or federal government or what have you? And I was thinking a little bit about this, and I came across two quotes that they're like the opposite from each other, or put a different way, they're two sides of the same coin. And I thought they were interesting in a way of putting forward both an opportunity and a challenge. Okay, here they are. The first one from Valerie Jarrett, who was the former chief of staff to Mayor Daley in Chicago, local government. Quote, "When you are in local government, you are on the ground and you are looking into the eyes and hearts of the people you are there to serve. It teaches you to listen. It teaches you to be expansive in the people with whom you talk to. And I think that engagement gives you political judgment. We're the closest to people, and that helps us be responsive, and it's a beautiful thing." Here is a quote from Jerusalem Demsis, who has written extensively for The Atlantic. She's talking about the nature of local politics. Quote, "The community input process is disastrous for two broad reasons. First, community input is not representative of the local population. Second, the perception of who counts as part of an affected community tends to include everyone who feels negative costs of, in this case, development, but only a fragment of the beneficiaries. Not everybody is a complainer, but pretty much everyone who shows up to a community meeting is." Food for thought. Please join me in the pledge.
"I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all."
Thank you, Ted. We've had items in the past that sometimes fill the room, and I always try to keep that perspective that, does this mean everyone feels this way, or do 24,900 people feel differently than the 100 people that are here? And, but I do appreciate local government. I think it's closest to the people, and I always tell people, my cell phone is on the website, The governor's isn't, the president's isn't, but local residents can call. Next item is a citizen comment. If there's anyone here to address the council, please come forward and state your name and address.
Dee Lawless. I live on 300 North. As most of you know, I somewhat represent the leadership in the senior lunch bunch. And this last week, I thought about the results of your supporting that. And the effervescence of the citizens that come. I was just talking to Wendy a few minutes ago, and she has seen it. We had 56 seniors there, there's about 54, 53 or something like that, plus two helpers that are also seniors, I think. But and just talking to them and seeing what's happened in the last year that you've been supporting the supplying of the food and providing that opportunity. I think that the benefit that the 56 people there have, a lot of them, that's their only out for the month to have, other than going to church maybe. They can come and they can visit and they've got their friends. If you come, you'll find out that there's about 8 little communities. Sometimes the 8th one's not there. That's an overflow table, but when you put 6 people at each, or 8 people at each table, and generally they sort of go to the table they normally sit at. But you see the enjoyment they get out of coming and socializing and, of course, a free meal. They also, some of them like to play bingo, some of them don't. And they almost always, I don't know of any time, well, one time I heard a complaint about the entertainment that it went a little bit too long. But I think that the, just the...
That was me speaking at the...
you know, just the time they spend there, the hospitality that the staff does when setting up the tables and making them available. And I really praise Wendy. I told her I was going to turn her face red, and she said, no, you're not. But anyway, we really appreciate the effort the staff puts in and setting up the tables, the effort that Wendy puts in and getting the entertainment, and Conrad for looking up the jokes and doing the welcome and doing the emceeing each time. I hate to think about what might happen if something happened to two or three of the people that make it run. I'd hate to see it terminate because of the joy that it does bring a lot of people. And I think it, you know, you need to be praised for supplying that. And I know that the mayor's been there a couple of times, Lisa's been there a couple of times, Ken has been there, but I'd like to invite any of you. It's the second Wednesday, 11:30. You don't need to make a reservation. Oh, 11. I'm sorry, 11 o'clock. We get there at 10:30. I get those numbers. You know, you get old and you forget things. So 11 o'clock, the second Wednesday. And if you desire to take a gift home from playing bingo, please be one. But if you just want to come and watch people play bingo and play bingo yourself, you can sit there and play bingo and just not yell anything. And so you can see the effort that is coming out of your efforts. And the joy, I think, that it does bring those who are there. We've had a few outsiders that have come, and they have enjoyed it. And so we are providing a little bit of benefit to some of the other communities. And but I, you know, we, the three or four of us that make sure that everybody's welcome and that they get an email each month saying, please come. We appreciate the city, and thank you very much for the effort and the money, I guess I'm going to put that in there, that you spend for our benefit. And so thank you very much.
Thanks. I've always felt comfortable going because I'm a senior, but I guess we'd waive the senior requirement for some of the council members here. Next item is consideration of an appointment. So we'll turn over to Tammy.
Okay, I am honored to present Tori Beck for approval for the appointment to the Arts Committee. And just for the question on the application says, what personal skills do you believe will contribute as a volunteer, that you can contribute as a volunteer to the city? And Tori owns an art gallery and custom frame shop, and also is a private vocal teacher and coach. But mostly, as I thought about that, I think it's just an opportunity to be a resident or a volunteer to the city and give of your time and talents. And we appreciate that so much and appreciate you being willing to do that for us. So thank you so much, Tori. And with that, I will just present. I move that the City Council approve the appointment of Tori Beck to the City's Art Committee with a term ending on January 1st, 2028.
I'll second. We'll second.
Wendy, did you figure out who? Okay.
Yeah, it's your committee.
Any other discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Tori, for your willingness to serve, and welcome. Next item is consideration of a bid award for Coventry Lane, Freedom Drive, Freedom Circle, Storm Drain Line, Culinary Water Line, Street Resurfacing Project for the amount of $1.4 million. Karen?
It's small. Okay, so the Coventry Way Freedom Drive and Freedom Circle project, this was part of the fiscal year 25 budget. So I'm just going to kind of recap something that you saw a little over a year ago. So we're going to do a waterline replacement, we're going to install a new storm drain line, and then followed with full asphalt replacement. You can see the extents. We'll do Coventry, Freedom Drive, and Freedom Circle. So hard to see, but you can see the ravine that runs right down the middle of this. What's happened is there's a natural channel or draw. It doesn't have a stream channel. It's just kind of the ravine. All of the storm drain that's collected from the development that was built in this area diverts the water directly down into this ravine. There's no storm drain. There's inlet boxes, but then the pipes flow down into the channel. And over time, it's created some significant erosion issues in this ravine. So you can kind of see from the photographs what the current conditions look like. So what we need to do is get the storm water diverted in storm drain to run down the canyon so that it is not creating this kind of problem. We get scouring, big storm events, flood the detention basin. And so we need to correct this problem. In addition, these are kind of the current asphalt conditions in this road. The water line in this area is a 6-inch line, which is not large enough for current fire flow requirements. It's more than 50 years old, and a PVC pipe that was manufactured in the 70s had about a 40-year lifespan. The asphalt's reached the end of its life. The water line has reached the end of its life, and the storm drain diversion needs to be done. We had six bids for this project. The low bidder was Black Forest Paving. We've worked with them before. We're big fans. They do great work for us. And we have a already approved budget of $1,430,000. And the low bid came in at $1,402,000 and change. Have any questions?
So I remember asking this last time when we talked about it, but given our previous conversation, obviously this is up in the area, which is a secondary recharge area. Is there a way that we can make the cement lining perforated so that there's a continual aquifer recharge, but it's more controlled?
So in this particular location, what's happened here is it was not a natural environment. The roads, the diversion went in, it concentrates the storm drain flow, puts it into a channel that never had it before. And so what we're doing is we're basically harming that erosion location. Where this water goes further down the channel, again, it's very lower bottom foothills. This is unlikely to be a location where recharge would be beneficial, but that will be a potential option in the future when we can do a recharge study. The places we're looking are really golf course area and above.
It starts below, then where, so is this snowpack coming down and then going under roads? Where does that ravine start?
So what happens here is if you look in the very bottom section, bottom right, you can see where Freedom Circle is. So then Freedom comes along, it crosses Centennial, and it goes to the left. So if you go back to Centennial, and I appreciate Wendy, and then you go just a little bit straight up to the north, halfway in between right there, that's where the water's collected and then dumps down into that channel. There are additional inlet boxes on Freedom Drive and on Centennial. There's only a couple. That road is more than 15% slope. So there are a few places where the water goes into an inlet box, the box then diverts it straight into the ravine. The water is screaming down this road. And so what happened, the development back in the 70s believed that you left the natural contours and you just kind of used it. More modern development is that they would come in and they would regrade everything and make these big, smooth engineered slopes. And current development is kind of a little better blend of the two. But in this case, where this is, so kind of how far up the hill? If you connect and go down, this is two or three blocks above 350 East.
Is where it's starting?
Where at the bottom section where it ties into Maria Lana.
And that's kind of where the natural water is starting to accumulate and then
right,
flows?
So this is just kind of those lower foothill areas.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that we would never want, we need the water, the road is so steep and the ravine is having so many problems with erosion that this is not a location for percolation because the water just moves way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the ravine will stay open, or are we lining the ravine?
The ravine will stay open, and some amount of water will continue to go. All natural water will flow in. If, Wendy, if you put your hand back at the intersection where Freedom crosses right there, that's where we're catching the water. The water north of there that flows into that low spot, and the water that flows from the north to that low spot will continue to go into the ravine.
We're just trying
to minimize the hazards from too much water being dumped into this natural environment.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Any other questions on this? Have we used spec construction for anything?
They have not been low bid on a project for me. They're an infrequent bidder, but I've certainly seen and heard their name before on some of our bids.
They definitely came in high on every one of the bids.
Right, so it's not uncommon for a contractor to say, well, they've got a bid, we want to remain on their mind, and we don't need the work, we're super busy, but if they want to pay us this much, we could figure out how to get it done. It's really common.
Yeah, and Tori Beck just left. I wondered if that was her husband's company. But, all right, entertain a bid on this? A motion? Or a bid, if you want to jump in and if you have an extra
$4 million.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council award the Coventry Way Freedom Drive and Freedom Circle Storm Drain Line, Culinary Water Line, and Street Resurfacing Project to Black Forest Paving for the price of $1.402,480.97.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Do we have a preference here? I mean, should I go back to Heidi at this point and do the...
I don't think it matters, but if you'd like to, we can. Or we can just do it at the end.
Well, since Karen's standing there anticipating, let's keep going.
So, again, this is one of the projects that was in the fiscal year 25 budget. So, we're looking at 850 North, 900 North, 950 North, and Matson. This is the little area tucked in between US 89 and 400 East. There's old 6-inch cast iron pipe that, again, is more than 50 years old. And we need to replace the asphalt. This is kind of the current condition of the roads in this location. This is the one we had 7 bids on. Newman Construction was the low bidder. Newman has not done projects for us in the past. So I called and spoke with other municipalities that they've done recent work for. They had glowing references. We're really excited to have the opportunity to work with them. And one thing to note is the original budget for this project was $625,000. There has been some change in scope, and so this project will require a budget amendment. It was originally scheduled to be done by our Public Works Waterline crew, who will be doing different projects this summer, so we moved them around. So this will require a future budget amendment, but we've had waterline breaks on these roads very recently. They're stacking up, and the one pipe we thought was PVC was found to be cast iron. So we strongly recommend doing the entire project if City Council is willing.
Okay. Any questions on this motion?
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council award the 850 North, 900 North, 950 North, and Madsen Lane Waterline and Street Resurfacing Project to Newman Construction for the price of $797,500.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. I don't know that I've ever seen first and second place bids that close before.
So out of $800,000, they were $375.06 apart.
Yeah.
I've never seen it that close in 25 years.
Yeah.
Something. Yes. Same AI.
Thank you.
Okay, next item is consideration of a bid award for sidewalk trip hazard removal. John? And while you're coming up, John, I know we grind these down. Have we ever mudded them up?
Yeah, we have done that in the past. Where we've had like undermining under sidewalks, we've filled them with grout.
Is that generally more expensive than just grinding?
The grinding is very affordable. The mud stuff, we had a contractor that was doing it, and then they stopped doing it. So we haven't really looked for anybody that's done it in the past recently. So, with that, the area that we have chosen to do the sidewalk grinding is along 350 East from Eagle Ridge to Center Street, and then from Center Street down to I-15, and then a section of Orchard Drive just from Center Street north to just past Cider Drive. The survey identified 451 hazards. 406 of these were trip hazards that are half inch to inch and a half, which are the ideal size to cut with this process. Anything over that, this just needs replacement because there's just too much material that's removed, so there's nothing left of the sidewalk at that point. And this process is, there's kind of a picture that I took from some of their literature, but the one on the left is using a grinding equipment that we actually had a grinder just that would do this there on the left. It kind of did a terrible job. That grinder had been here longer than I have and just recently broke, and we can't get parts for it anymore, so we only use that on stuff when we had like a real dire emergency. But the process they use on the right, that this company is, it gets it to ADA compliant, and it's a nice smooth cut, and they have a patented equipment that does this. So just another example of kind of what the sidewalk looks like. You know, they don't always just crack right across the entire length. They kind of do this little bow tie stuff sometimes too. So that's the process. The bid for this was $35,072.11. So
that's their profit margin, that 11 cents. Any questions on this? Motion?
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council award the contract for sidewalk trip hazard removal along 350 East Center Street and Orchard Drive to Precision Concrete Cutting in the amount of $35,072.11.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I have a question related to this topic. Often I'll get residents that ask me about their particular sidewalks. What is the process that I should be telling residents? I know that the city has gone and repaired some individual home sidewalks and corrected them for trip hazards, but I'm not sure that that's the process for everybody. How should I answer that question?
So we've gone through and we've looked at trip hazards citywide. This is obviously just a small section, and it was chosen because it's near a school and most likely a route that kids would take to school. Other sidewalk grinding projects that we've done on the west side were focused around the elementary school as well. It's a huge problem.
I can tell exactly where it is. Everybody that tunneled under the sidewalk for their sprinkler line, you can see every house where they did that because it's sunken down now.
Yeah, you look at our survey and everywhere there's a tree, there's also a trip hazard too. Yeah.
So it's one of the projects that we need to bring back to the City Council is really a a plan. It's I'd call it a budget plan, but it's more than that. It will take a financial commitment annually to take care of these sidewalks. And we did, as John said, we've surveyed the city. We need to continue to survey the city, but we need to make progress in eliminating the worst trip hazards, because on occasion people do have falls and spills on those.
So if people ask me about it, should I send them to the city? And maybe that's part of the documenting where you can see where they are?
I think you can send them to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just the kind of the online website where there's like the send
either
the message?
Either that, or if you want to have them just email me or John or David.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
So assuming we have an organized plan to address this going forward, can we paint trip hazards or something as a temporary, or is that not even effective?
I don't know that I have an opinion about that. Yeah. It doesn't look great, but it probably would be a good warning for people. Yeah.
Well,
we'll study that. I think this is a good work session topic. Yeah. And it's something that we've struggled with a little bit as a staff, but I think it is a multi-million-dollar problem.
As a city, we have immunity?
We have some immunity. Mm-hmm. It's a little unfair if someone has a significant injury and we should have fixed the sidewalk and didn't. I think those immunity caps can have an unfair feeling to them.
I have on a building, I have a slight slope and stairs that start at zero and go like this. And in years past, if somebody tripped on the stairs, the insurance company would just pay them to go away. I had one, and they basically responded and said, "We're sorry, you're a klutz. Quit tripping on us." So insurance companies are pushing back on these things at this point.
Now we've had some residents who have made claims, and we've settled with those. You know, we've paid medical bills and things in those cases.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We've had a motion and a second, correct? Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thanks, John. Craig, let's look at a site surveillance trailer system.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for your time this evening. I'm sure many of you have seen these site surveillance trailers. They're becoming very common among retail establishments, and they're also being used very commonly in events. As we have talked about some of the things that we would like to do to improve our ability to help enhance security at events and issues going on in our city. Things like big projects that are coming up, like the Hatch Park reconstruction, where we're going to have a lot of assets sitting out for a long time. Things like Liberty Fest that has a large mass gathering that we have some camera ability to watch the crowd. Other camera ability is limited. I started looking several months ago about purchasing these same systems we see in parking lots of like Home Depot or at construction projects. We saw them up here at Eaglewood Lofts when they were building when Brighton Homes was building those apartments at 425 North, and found that the biggest company providing these was a company called LVT, and they're out of Utah actually, but they don't sell their product. They lease it for anywhere from $24,000 to $38,000 a year to lease that project, and they take care of these things bumper to bumper. In the past, we have bought a couple of cameras that we consider them pull cameras for surveillance from this company, SVCI. They're a local company out of Murray. They do a lot of upfitting for emergency response vehicles, including the camera systems that they have attached to those vehicles. They've also done some work for us in the past. They did the interview rooms downstairs with their camera systems and the software associated with that. I spoke to their owner, and he has been developing one of these cameras to build and sell, and he's actually sold one to a private company. But as he started talking to us about this, he said, "I can build that for you, and with the warranties and everything save you a lot of money over time. And so a few months ago, I started looking at where we could find some cost underruns to make this purchase instead of coming to the council and asking for an ongoing lease for you know, anywhere from $24,000 to $38,000 a year to use current budget cost underruns through our personnel and through some of our equipment that we've saved this year to buy one for the city that we could move around. We'd be very nimble in our ability to put it where it needs to be used. We could use it for short-term investigations. We can use it for long-term projects or events. And so the bid is attached to this, including, and I'm sorry, I can't explain what every one of these little line items is in the bid. Matt Steno is an expert on these cameras, but this is a full four-camera system with the alert systems, with the lights, the horn, the onboard recording, as well as storing the recording in the crowd, the ability to control the camera remotely, one or all four of the cameras, and you know, retrieve that data quickly if it's needed. These cameras are, I have seen these cameras, they are very high power cameras. They can see a long ways away and get good details. So if we did have this set up at, say, like Liberty Fest down by our command center, we would hopefully be able to see at least the entire area where the participants are with some level of clarity. Anyway, I hope that is a brief explanation of what this is and why it's expensive this year, but in the long run, I think it is a cost savings for us to own this and not lease it.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions on this? Motion?
I'll make a motion. I think it's a good idea, by the way. Thanks. You for finding a cost saving. I move that the City Council approve the Police Department expend up to $45,000 to purchase a mobile surveillance trailer system from SVCI Inc. for use in various city departments.
I'll second it.
Thank you. I assume that if we're happy customers, he'll want to use this as a reference.
Oh, I think he will. He might even want to take it down to some of the, like the sheriff's annual convention and things like that. So we'll charge him for that rent, by the way, about $24,000 a year.
Yeah. All right, let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 All righty.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next item is consideration of resolution 2025-23R, a resolution amending the city's comprehensive fee schedule for certain golf and municipal election fees. Tyler on the golf.
I think I'm first. Thanks, Mayor and Council. Just a few minor changes to our fee schedule with the range balls. Now that we have our driving range structure in place with the technology here, we kind of wanted to be more in line with what TrackMan's recommendation was for charging for the facility, and then as well as more of a cleanup item for our tournaments from the 8,500 to the 9,000. So it is a small increase from our $8, our small tokens, and two tokens. We're adding a smaller amount to kind of keep that lower priced option for people, and then increasing those two and three token amounts. So. Any questions on those?
No, I have no question, but I got to tell you, you guys got to go use this TrackMan system. It's so fun. It's so great. And the setting is wonderful, and it's a lot of people from all various ages were using it. It was fun to see the junior high to high school to the old guys, old women. So it's getting so much play, right? Anyway, so I think it's wonderful, and to think that you can have that much fun for $7 or 13 or 18 is unbelievable.
Yeah, and to give you an idea of time, a one token, 35 balls is gonna take someone 10, 15 minutes to hit. The 70 balls is gonna take them 20 to 30 minutes if they're taking their time, and the large is gonna take them 30 to 40 minutes depending on how rapid fire they are with them. My daughter would take about 20 minutes for the three tokens, but someone's
is that someone that knows what they're doing?
And by the way, I was able to watch Tyler drive off of the TrackMan. It was worth watching. That's all I can say.
And Tyler assured me that it will not yell at you like, "That's a horrible shot, Brian. What are you doing?" You know?
They charge more for that upgrade.
We had our Davis County Chamber Mayor's Lunch this last week, and I, as I was reporting on the city, I highlighted this trackman system. And so if you get an influx from out of the area, it's the chamber coming through.
Very fun.
Have you seen many of the youth passes coming back?
We've already had more redemptions for those than we had for all of the other years for the golf. So
yeah, I've had a bunch already tell me they've already been back.
Yeah. So I have at least, I've told everyone I want to keep the vouchers because I want to see how many. I have over a dozen on my desk that the kids have come, so it's been fun. Yeah.
Mm. So my husband asked me to vote no on this, but I would love to suggest that at some point, maybe a very low time, that we go do this as a council activity. I think would be really fun, and for that I'll vote yes. But
I will note before you vote on it, with this TrackMan system, I'm able to look at our, and I'll continue to look at all the data, but really see when the driving range is being utilized, how many people are hitting certain during certain times. So there may be, you know, even next time I bring it to you, hey, we want to offer between X time and X time a discounted rate because that's our lowest times, or some other promotions, and we'll look at doing some of those, but it'll be good.
Okay.
I'll make a motion if that's okay.
Well, we just have one resolution, so I guess we should have Wendy do her presentation too.
Oh, well, okay. Oh, that's right, because that's part of the schedule.
Yeah.
Yes. Hello, Mayor and Council. Thank you. Because these fees are all in the city's comprehensive fee schedule, and that is adopted by a resolution, I'll just explain to you a couple of the fees that you had a look at in your packet. This summary, I guess, shows the fees for election filing that are throughout Davis County. The top ones are all Davis County cities, and then I threw on some other throughout the state fees of what they're charging for people when they file for candidacy. And as you can see from this, we charge our current fee that is included in our fee schedule is $25 for candidates to file for an election. We are slightly below average because the average was $26. There are some a lot higher, some are don't charge a fee at all. It was interesting as I called a couple of the cities, a lot of them don't charge because they don't get a lot of candidates. And the ones, like, I think has been suggested on maybe the reason for considering it is some have issues with people just filing to file but no intention to really run or make an effort at it. So that gives you that data. And then, of course, if you want to, I've left the motion open to you guys determining what fee you think is appropriate. And if that is staying at 25, then you can just not include that in the motion. And also, I thought another thing that would be good for you to consider is by state statute, municipal clerks are allowed to charge a $50 fee if a candidate does not file their financial disclosures on time. And as you all have done this, you know, there's, you know, your first financial disclosures due 35 days before an election, and then you have to file after the election, and then you've got to file again if you're in the general, and then post. So there's maybe four times that you could file those candidate financial disclosures. And we couldn't, so the city of North Salt Lake couldn't charge that $50 fee that's allowed by state because we don't have it in our comprehensive fee schedule. So if you want the option of charging it, I just thought it was worth throwing it out there that if it's something that you're considering, we could include it. And there are pros and cons to doing that, right? But I guess the one thing I would say, if you were interested in, it would be hard to say after the fact, oh, that person, we totally should have. You know, it would just need to be a policy that is in place. The fee, it does say that the city clerk may impose a $50 fee. It doesn't mean we have to. So even if you wanted to adopt it and put it in the fee schedule, you could say, but let's only do this in dire circumstances, and that's fine, but we would just want to apply it consistently, not based on per candidate or anything like that. And then I would say the only benefit for that is, let's say we have in this coming up election, three people file to run for mayor, and we have two. So we're going to be in a primary situation whenever you get over two people per seat, and then the third person is late in filing their disclosures, which can result, if they're 24 hours late, in a disqualification from the election. So let's say a person filed for candidacy, didn't complete their financial disclosures in time, and they were disqualified from the election, and now there isn't a need for a primary. That just costs the city $18,000, and we're only going to recoup $50 for that. But there are a lot of staff time, getting information out, things that need to be done if a candidate is disqualified. So that $50 is, you know, still pretty minimal to the expense that could happen if people didn't file their on time. And I go to every effort to make sure people are reminded. So I think we won't have that issue. We haven't seen it, but if it's not on the fee schedule, we can't do it. So that is, now you can ask questions or you can discuss what you want that to be.
I just want to throw out here, so this did come up years ago in an election. The candidate, it was a city council position, his job took him to have a supai or somewhere down the Grand Canyon, and we reached out continually to the, hey, you need to get this in, and he never got the email, and I remember they reached out to the county and said, so what do we do? And they said, there's nothing you can do. We will not count his votes. And I don't know that, you know, a fine would have made a difference. Also, I had that thought that if I've just got eliminated, and you want to charge me a fine, I don't know that I'll pay it. You know, it'd be like good luck collecting that. I also looked at the Salt Lake City one. You know, because part of I brought this up. Do we want to raise this? It's been this way for a long time, and I am concerned a little bit about, you know, it's like running for Congress. You know, you have to be rich or have lots of backing to run for Congress. I didn't want to eliminate anybody, but as I looked at the Salt Lake attempt at that, to have the staff try to determine if 75 residents are actually legitimate, that costs more than our fee. So I am mixed on this. I gotta say, I don't want to. You know, I would think $100 would eliminate people that file and not really in serious and running, but I don't want to necessarily recommend that. So I don't know how I feel about this, I guess, is my conclusion.
Let me ask a follow-up. So the determination in that election that you referenced came from the county that individual was disqualified?
We really, and I'm speaking we because my wife was involved in this, and she was like, well, I'm not sure what, you know, is there a grace period now or something? And so she reached out to the county, and they said, we will not count his votes. And I believe he would have come in third and been elected to the council.
Yeah. And it is state code that they are disqualified from the election if they do not file timely and within 24 hours of the deadline.
Okay, that addresses my concern that cannot be applied sporadically. And I wonder if knowing you're getting eliminated, I'm not sure the $50 is a better deterrent from that. But it also sounds like it has not happened ever since then. Is that true? So any other individuals who might just be filing in name only and not doing anything, those individuals have been putting in their reports on time?
Since I have been here, okay. One election.
I wasn't actually aware that you could come in late. You know, I thought the deadline was a hard deadline.
Somebody filed late and they made that law. When I,
Mayor, when I look at these fees in our peers, they're all low, right? They're all not a lot of money. And yet, I think that if somebody had really no sincere interest, maybe $50 is like, well, what could I do with $50? So there's no science to this, but 25 feels like it's just kind of completely inconsequential, and $50 feels like it might keep somebody from running that really shouldn't run because they have zero intention of actually even doing an iota of campaigning. So 50 is still low, but it feels like a number that makes more sense. Again, there's no science behind that. That's just my sense of it.
I agree. That's exactly what I was thinking. I think 50 is just slightly inhibitive of just filing to file because it's a hobby. and 25, probably you would take a flyer on that. So, yeah. I don't know about the late. I was wondering whether there were people that had ever filed just to file but then didn't file their financials. I would think that fee would be inhibitive also, but it sounds like that doesn't ever happen. So maybe it doesn't matter.
I think we make every effort to make sure they do file on time because they would get disqualified, and that, you know, would be, it is costly to have that happen for sure. Plus, you know.
However, like you said, it's not harmful to put it on the fee schedule because then we have the option. We don't have to implement it. And so I do think that it might just open up the option, and I don't see a downside to that.
It might create, because if somebody is filing with not any real intention to run, and they know if I miss the deadline, I get disqualified, but then I'm still only out $25, okay. But if there is a $50 fee to file, and then even though I am disqualified, also a $50, that might start even earlier on affecting the choice. I also think I can see some of these cities down at the bottom have a different rate for running for mayor. And because the mayor is one spot, that means if three people file, there has to be a primary. Whereas for all the city council elections, there have to be five up to seven in order to need a primary. It might be worth considering a higher fee for the mayor position only. But I don't know. There are multiple ways to look at that as well.
I think all those are full-time mayor positions too, but
interesting.
But yeah, it's, again, we're not talking about a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Ogden City has a full-time mayor, and they're $25. So.
Washington City has a full-time
mayor? I'm not sure about Washington, but I know St. George, Orem, Provo, Salt Lake all do.
Interesting. Yeah, I did not research that part of the equation.
Well, I like the $50 filing fee and then $50 fee for not
submitting. I'm going to change the screen when you're ready.
Yeah. I do too. I like that. I don't see a problem with it.
Any other comments or concerns before we do? Okay, I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2025-23R, amending the city's comprehensive fee schedule, adjusting fees related to municipal elections, and setting the filing fee at $50, and establishing a $50 fine for late campaign financial statement disclosures, as well as adjusting certain golf fees for fiscal year 2026 as proposed.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on this? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes. Next item is consideration of City Council minutes for May 6th, 2025. I didn't have any thing for it. Motion on this?
I'll make a motion. I move the City Council approve meeting minutes from May 6, 2025 as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Let's go back and pick up Heidi. She's been sitting there waiting patiently.
I just about decided you forgot, and I was going to be okay with that. All right. And this actually is going to cover the first three quarters of the fiscal year and just run a couple of comparisons, first for the general fund, then looking at revenues and expenditures, and then a comparison of revenues across the board citywide by source, as was requested during the budget retreat. So for the third quarter, or through the third quarter of 2025, this is some general fund performance data. So you can see that our tax revenues are 83% collected. You can see sales tax revenues from 2025, our year-to-date is 3.93 compared to 3.78 last year. Property tax, $2.57 million compared to $2.82 million in fiscal year 2024. The reason for that variance is we had a late distribution from the county, which was $295,000, which puts us comparatively about $2.86 million. So we're right in line with those tax revenues. And then franchise taxes, we've collected $1.47 million compared to $1.4 million last year. And in comparison, so sales tax covers about 56% of the general fund budget. Property tax is 27%, franchise taxes are 14%. And then last year, actual budget to actuals, we received sales tax revenue. We only collected 97.5%. We were about $160,000 shy of what we had budgeted. But property tax was 104.5%, and franchise taxes were collected at 114%. So for general fund expenditures for the same period comparison, for the first 9 months of the year in 2025, the total amount expended is $10.87 million compared to 2024, which is $10.44 million. And you can see how that breaks out between admin, public works, and public safety. So both admin and public works align very closely. The increase is largely related to public safety, where we've expended $6.27 million year-to-date compared to $5.79 million last year-to-date. And keep in mind, this is both police and fire. And so if you take a look at those breakdowns, about 19% of our general fund budget goes towards administration, as well as planning and economic development. 31% goes to public works, which is going to be just streets and parks, and then fire and public safety, the last 50%. We talked a little bit earlier about some unspent funds and allocating those towards that trailer, the safety trailer, or the camera system. So you can see, starting from the bottom on the right, public safety turned back or had unspent funds of $261,000 at the end of last fiscal year. Public works departments was $72,000, and administrative departments was $298,000. And so you can see, while we had budgeted at one point to have a potential deficit spending, we underspent in certain areas by the end of the year and didn't recognize that. So this is a comparison of that 9 month period. Green bars are revenue, red bars are expenditures. You can see the first thing to point out is October, November, and December are heavy expenditure months for us. Those are going to be largely related to capital spending in streets and water. Of that amount, between October and December of this fiscal year, we spent more than we collected by about $4.4 million, which is typical of seasonal work that we do, especially with those capital projects. You'll also notice that revenue might appear low to be able to essentially balance the budget by the end of the year. We have three more months left of the year. You're going to see it kind of flip-flop a little bit. And by the end of the year, by the time we look at June should look more like November, except opposite. Revenue will be high, expenses will be down. Because our revenue collections go all the way into August, that's how long it takes to get all of our distributions for the period that ends June 30th. So those get booked later on in the fiscal year. So it does feel a little bit out of balance right now. One other thing to point out with this slide is that I think it somewhat demonstrates the importance of having a fund balance to help for those time periods where collections are, because they're so seasonal, depending on the type of revenue stream, to continue our capital projects even during those slow collection times. So you can see the big spike in December. That's going to be when we received our property tax revenues, which we get a big amount in November, comes in December, and then again in May for personal property. So it helps kind of ease some of that economic cycle. So looking at revenues by month, by fund type, on the left-hand side, you can see a revenue from governmental funds versus revenue in proprietary funds. So you see the governmental funds in December are high, and that's going to be that property tax. You'll see that proprietary funds, which are going to be our utilities, revenues are high in July, August, and September, and that's going to be for essentially our water users. And then similar data on the other chart related to expenditures by fund type. And then last is a look and an overview of our revenue. And I could have presented this. This says total 100%, and I could have put this in a pie chart. But this is citywide revenue coming into all of the different funds. So 22% of our revenue comes from sales tax, and that comes into the general fund and into the wrap tax fund. 22% of the overall revenues are from property tax, and that's revenues into the general fund, and then RDA tax increment that comes into the RDA funds. 7% franchise taxes, which is revenue that comes into the general funds. Of those first three amounts, those would be basically, except for the RDA tax increment, considered unrestricted funds, so can be spent for any general government purposes. It's not tied to a certain type of expenditure. That kind of changes as you kind of go down the line. So charges for services in the general fund is 4%. And again, the services have to, you can't charge a fee that would be more than it costs to provide the service. And so that is heavily watched throughout the budget and audit process. Utility fees pretty much operates the same way. You wouldn't want to run huge surpluses in your utility except to manage a capital improvement plan, but it would need to be planned spending, future planned spending. So our utility fees are 26% of collections. Golf fees are 26% of revenues. And then intergovernmental revenue, 7%. Most of this is going to be transportation tax and B&C road funds and then the grant funds. So again, restricted for a very specific purpose. So,
Heidi, is there a significance to the utility and golf fees being the same and yet the graphs are dramatically different? Or?
Yeah, that needs to be adjusted. It should okay. be.
All right. I didn't know if you were like netting out the golf fees.
No.
Like or something. But.
No, that was just me fiddling with the new software program, trying okay. to get it to line up and work with me instead of using a chart. So I apologize.
It was a test.
Right in line. Passed. like sales tax and property tax.
It is super useful to see our revenue broken out this way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will you invest? Okay.
Thank you, Heidi. I always appreciate the quick overview instead of the pages and pages and pages of charts. Next items, action items.
I have two small notes on this. One is I'm not talking about the Chevron item because I know I'm being funny here, just not actually that funny. Because I know that we're going to talk about that with the strategic conversation, but that is not scheduled. And so one option is to go ahead and schedule. No, not the strategic. Put the Chevron on the agenda, but, you know, one way or the other. So that's one. And then the other is, I wonder if we should combine item 14 and 21. They look very similar. Yeah, so 14 is...
Yeah, that would be a good combination, I think. I mean, they are a little different, but we can handle them in the same meeting or the same report back to the council. And to your first point, Ted, I know this isn't a Q&A, but in my manager report, I'm going to give you some ideas about when we will do the retreat.
That works.
Anything else on action items? Let's go to council reports. We'll start with Tammy.
Thank you. I am just going to report on the Kite Festival that we had a couple weeks ago. It was fabulous. And Dallas, the chair of the board, he counted at, I want to say, 10:30 or a little bit after, that there was 700 plus people there. So very well attended. And I did want to do a shout out for the Public Works people. They are amazing. They come and they just do amazing work. They were there before any of us showed up and had the flags out, the big North Salt Lake blow up, whatever they call that. And they just are amazing. So thank you, John, for your crew and all that they do for us and everything. And Ken was there to talk to anybody that needed any assistance that had questions with North Salt Lake. And it just was such a good and fun event. And I ran into somebody that they had sent their kids up to the Kite Festival, but they went to Home Depot. And they could see the big kites from Home Depot, which is, that's a long ways.
Yeah.
And then later that day, we were driving on Highway 89, and I saw one of our kites flying right here at one of the townhomes. So I just thought that was a win. If they took the kite home and flew it later, that was just so amazing. So I love the Kite Festival. I just think that is such a good event. So thank you to all who came and participated in the council that was there. I just really appreciate that a lot. That's all I have for my report.
I'd just like to add that I was standing in the pavilion at 10 after 11, so over an hour into it, and they gave out the last two kites right then. And so 400 seems to be almost a perfect number. At least this year it was. We'll see. But yeah, great event.
Well, and I'm not sure, because we did do those, the Fox 13. So there was a lot of people that were not North Salt Lake residents that came, which is not a problem at all. And those big kites that were there, they did, those were from Draper. That I guess they have a kite group And they had come and had not ever been to Tunnel Springs Park, and they talked about how awesome of a venue that was and what an event that was, and he said he would put that on his calendar for next year. So, good event.
Yeah. Lisa.
Thank you. This last week, I attended two assemblies at Foxborough and Wasatch Peak Academy for the One Kind Act a Day. Those two schools worked with the organization for the year and then were being awarded Certified School of Kindness. And that was really nice to participate with that. Mason has done a fantastic job with that.
And I think there was some news coverage a little bit about that, which was really so fantastic.
Yeah, I was really happy about that too. The next thing is the new Amberley development in Foxborough. The HOA did pass that they will be enclosed in the HOA, which is wonderful. The HOA president took that to heart, and he was going door to door to get votes. It was widely popular. Like 90% of the people were saying yes, but they had to get a super majority of houses, so he was just trying to get enough votes, and he did it, and it's great. Yeah, I think it's going to be a real asset to the community to not have a little island that is not part. So that is all managed and will run smoothly. And I think as soon as they're available, those houses are all pretty much pre-sold. So they're done, I think. And then my last thing, in two weeks is the city's Unity in the Community Pride event. And that committee is running and they've got it all rolling. I know that some of the council has received concerns about that event. And so I really would invite you to come to the event and see what it actually looks like. So when you have residents that talk to you about it and express concerns, you can speak from this is what it actually feels like to be there and what's actually happening there. I think that can add a lot of experience and knowledge to those complaints. And that's it.
What's the actual date for that?
June 2nd.
Thank you.
So it's Monday, 5 to 8 at Legacy Park, and it's at the same time as the food truck night.
Thank you. Lisa?
Okay, I'll make it quick. I wanted to give you an update on what we're doing as a city with the Boulder Way Forward. Because we were the first city, we've had other cities now following us, and Midvale is doing it next week. And Farmington wants to do it, and Bountiful. So each of those cities are going to have a proclamation and a resolution. The county coalitions in the 29 counties are also following our lead, and they're going to have counties that are Boulder Way Forward counties. There has been a logo that's been prepared for our marquee and for any publications that says North Salt Lake, Boulder Way Forward, and then it has City Partner. So they've created a new logo that is standard for their branding. And one thing I thought might be a good idea, and maybe I can talk about this in more detail at another time, but I think it would be good to set up some trainings at City Hall and have residents, anybody who might be interested, the YCC on a given day, maybe the senior lunch bunch, to raise the issues and awareness, educate on this particular area. Of wanting women and girls to thrive and fair gender wage gap and so forth. So that I'd like to do more with that, and I'm planning on doing that. One thing I noticed, because I've watched a lot of other cities' agendas, the budget process done in Bountiful is very different than ours. And what they do is they meet for days on the budget. They, like, you know, we get our budget periodically explained to us over time throughout the year. But they do it and wait till the end of the year. So, like, on Monday, we're going to be talking about parks from 10 to 12. And then from 1 to 4, we're going to be talking about. And they do it in a 72-hour, I don't know. So it's something we might want to consider if the intensity makes for the concentration better at the end of the year. So I just wanted to raise that issue. And then the spring cleanup, on Sunday we went in pouring rain, and they were there. The parks and the public works people were there. TJ was driving the forklift, forklift, I think. Anyway, it was amazing. And I said, has it been busy? Because when we went there, it was pouring rain. And he said, oh, yes, yesterday we had 300 cars, 300 drop-offs on Saturday. So that was really utilized, and I'm sure very appreciated. One other thing is the Spring Hill Geological Park. I think I had raised this with Ken, but maybe not the rest of you. The idea of turning that into a dog park is something that I'd like that looked into, to see if that is a potential location for a dog park, and whether or not it's got some prohibitions with regard to it being almost like a preserve. So we'll have to see. But I'd like to have us consider that one. And then finally, I would like to, maybe at the end of this council discussion, talk about how we're discussing the homeless center and a potential location, if we could do that maybe collectively afterward.
Mine is short. I went to Syracuse. I have kids who live in Syracuse. And they suggested a place to eat, and it was a tiny little footprint, but there was a burger joint, a juice bar, an ice cream place, and another food location. But it was such a tiny footprint. I took some pictures I can share, but I thought we could easily do something like that in phase two of Hatch Park if we're looking at bringing in, like our master plan, some more food locations, some retail. I was amazed. And Syracuse, it was surrounded on one side by fields and then the other side by houses. I know that our circle of rooftops for especially food, restaurant businesses is tricky because half of our circle is empty because we go into the gravel pit. I do wonder if there was an openness of mind to shift that circle so it actually kind of began where the food place is and goes the other direction. We've got to be close to as dense as at least that location in Syracuse. I think that's one metric, but we might need to be more proactive in pushing other metrics in wooing, especially restaurant places. But footprint-wise and population density-wise, I could easily see how we could do something like that in North Salt Lake, especially around our Hatch Park. And then I was driving my mom around yesterday, and I promise I have not mentioned this to her, and so she said it completely unsolicited, and I thought, oh, that's nice. I feel like I mentioned that a few times, but she said to me, you know what I love about Woods Cross that they do so well? And I said, what? And she said, every time you enter any part of the city, it's beautiful. She said, there's those rose bushes, and they have a sign that says you are entering Woods Cross. And she said, you can just feel when you've entered the city because there's some aesthetics that you just feel that. She said, I wish Bountiful did that. Sorry, Bountiful. But I thought in my head, well, I want North Salt Lake to feel the same way. And it is a little rough when you enter North Salt Lake on our two southern corridors, I think, it is a little rough. And so so we have the opportunity to up our game and equal Woods Cross. Natalie would have some things to say about that, I know. But they're doing that well. And the other thing she said is, you know what I think North Salt Lake does well? And I said, what? And she said, those signs that you have everywhere of the events. She said, it just feels like such a community effort. And it makes me want to be part of North Salt Lake because you always are advertising these super fun community events. That's cool. And so I thought, you know what? Everyone values different things in cities, but those are very valid comments. So we can take it for what it's worth.
Thank you. Ted?
We put the fun in South Davis County. We need some slogan.
We put the fun in dysfunctional, isn't that?
Two things. The first one, Sherry and I, we will talk about the active transportation tour to Hoboken. You know, when you go to Hoboken, we listen to the mayor, Hoboken, New Jersey. When you listen to the mayor, you listen to any staff person, you listen to just about anybody that's tied in with Hoboken, they know what their number one goal is for as a city, or at least one of their preeminent goals is pedestrian bicycle safety. Now, I'm not going where you think I might be going. My point is that they have a clarity of goal. That's my point. And do we know what our clear goals are? I can't I can't tick off one, two, three. Yeah, this is what we're in alignment to accomplish as a city. The really great thing is we're in the middle of a general plan process. It's a great time for us to establish this. And in fact, you know, we've had this conversation a little bit in the general plan, but I think we haven't brought it to port, so to speak. And so I guess my thing is that, you know, let's do that. Let's establish our goals. Maybe it's not one like Hoboken. Maybe it's three or five, but things that help us focus and be aligned and advance some things in a significant way, not presupposing what those are. But again, that the general plan process is a great time for us to look at that. Maybe that means that we bring that component of the general plan early, while acknowledging that the general plan process has been built a lot on draft goals, and we probably don't want to do maybe a giant shift. Maybe there's general plan goals and then there's yearly strategic goals, and you know what I mean. So there's different ways we could slice and dice this, but we ought to slice and dice it. That is point one. The other one is the public works yard and facilities. I believe that staff has been talking about this on some level. You know, we had this annexation that we rejected that would have extended North Salt Lake west of the Jordan River. And I go back in my head about whether we did the right thing. Ultimately, it's a really bizarre thing to annex something in another county. And now, you know, we have homeless questions. That's not my point. My point is that one of the, sorry for the circuitousness, one of the things that annexation might have helped us with is more room to operate our public works efforts. If we have some options and we can do some good work in that, we ought to explore it. Again, you know, Ken's about to chime in. I'm sure that the staff has been thinking about this, but if there is something that there's a budgetary component, there's a policy component, there's a city prioritization thing, I think it's an important thing for us to explore. It's sort of the blocking and tackling of our city. If we're not doing a great job, we are doing a great job with our public works. Can we support them by giving them the facilities that they need?
I want to add on that. You know, when I went and did the dumping, I noticed that the public works building needs to be painted. Public works, the letters across the top, we've got to make sure there's funding for them to correct the way that looks, because it looks a little bit worn down. Okay?
Okay. I just want to say, I have this, I'm focused on don't run out of money. Yeah.
That's a good focus.
And isn't Hoboken where Frank Sinatra was from?
Yes.
So they should capitalize on that, maybe, instead of...
Well, I thought it was going to be like an analogy to North Salt Lake, like, let's be proud of our city, Hoboken. That's our that's our main goal.
All right. Elisa had one more thing.
Yes, sorry, I forgot one more. Tyler and I worked together, but Tyler created this. I'm not taking credit. But we talked about a teacher appreciation gift for the elementary schools that was kind of adjacent to the golf course. So Tyler prepared this, and I'm going to be delivering these to the three elementary schools in the city. So it's a voucher for one bucket of balls at the driving range, which I think is another great way to just say to the staff and the faculty and the cities or the schools in our city, like, thank you for being here. We're grateful that you're part of our city. A portion of those live in our city, but I think a bigger portion travel into our city. And I love also this idea of you are here because you're contributing to our communities, and we really value that. So I'm going to send these cards down if you'll sign them, and then I'm going to deliver these to the schools tomorrow.
That's awesome. On that line, and I'll reach out to Chief maybe, the donut thing, has that gone anywhere? You know, where public works and the police could hand out those certificates for?
Not as far as I think we would have wanted it to, but we are seeing, we started that in kind of cold weather, and we still have some of those, so maybe with it being warmer weather, we're going to have some more interactions. That's a good reminder to the officers to be aware
of. The reason I bring it up is I was driving one day and saw something, and I thought, dang, I wish I had one to give to that person. And so maybe we should give the council each a couple, to, you know, and then... Do you know what we're talking about? So there's these, it's through the One Kind Act, and there's like a certificate for JJ Donuts. And if a police officer sees someone going beyond doing something nice, they can pull over and just give them, and then they can go, I think, exchange it for 6 donuts or something. And so we gave them to the police and the public works people that are out in our community. But it might be helpful if we all had a couple in our car, and if we saw something, we could do that too. Ken, did you?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't know you were done there. Just taking notes on what I'm supposed to do tomorrow.
Does it make sense for us to talk public works? I guess you're going to have a chance to weigh in on this, Ken, but does it make sense for us to put that on an agenda item or a work session or option C?
Yes. Any or all of those, but we'll put it on the action items and bring it to you in a work session. We have some ideas about it. So thank you for that. And thanks for the nod to the need to expand. We do have a need to expand. Briefly, I sent you an email about the Weber Basin Watershed tour. So if you want to go on that, make sure you respond, and the information's on that flyer. A thought on the retreat, and I'll add a thought expounding on what Councilmember Jackson said earlier. Here's my thought. We had a hard time. We could not find dates where all 6 of you were available together. So I think I reported that to you a while ago. Here's my suggestion. We've looked forward in time at future council meetings, and the council meetings in June are filled with some important business related to adopting the budget. We have the report from Councilmember Knowlton and Sherry Pace on their trip about active transportation on their tour. We have several things we're trying to get done. But beginning in July, on July 15th, August 5th, and August 19th, we don't have items scheduled. And I wonder if we could hold at least on 2 out of those 3 meeting dates, we could conduct our retreat sessions, our strategic planning sessions. One of those, this is where Councilmember Jackson's suggestion comes into play. We could do one of those up at the golf course and as an activity experiment with golf. Or was it you that council member was asking? I can't remember which one of you said we should all try it up there. Maybe, I think it was you. Anyway, sorry about messing that up. So anyway, that's so if we used a couple of those and then we decided we wanted to meet on a Saturday, we could still do that if we need more time. But I might suggest maybe July 15th and August 5th as 2 regular council meetings in a row. We also have, we do have a 5th Tuesday in July. So we could meet on the 15th up at the golf course. We could also meet on the 29th here at City Hall for, and if we were committed to maybe a 6 p.m. to 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, we could get quite a bit of work done in 2 Tuesday nights, which I think most of us already have set aside for the purpose of meeting. So that's my suggestion, and then if we need a if we do need a Saturday, we have some Saturdays open. That is Saturdays that don't have city activities in July. After Liberty Fest, things do slow down on Saturdays for us until the fall. So that's my suggestion, and if you feel okay about that, we'll just move towards that, and we'll keep those meetings free.
Are the 5th of July or the 19th of July?
No. So I would propose doing our first two retreat sessions on Tuesday evenings.
On the 15th of July?
On the 15th of July, which is a regular council meeting night, we would go to the golf course and begin the retreat there. And then on August 5th, which is also Then the next retreat night would be July 29th, which is the 5th Tuesday of July. We would conduct another retreat 2 weeks after the 15th.
Okay.
So July 15th, then July 29th.
I apologize. I will not be here on the 15th.
Okay.
I will be also not here on the 29th. Of July.
Okay.
Sorry.
August 5th is our next council meeting. So we could move this to August 5th and August 19th. Or we could do August 5th and a Saturday in August.
I like using the council meeting nights.
I think I didn't quite know how else to get us all available.
Sure.
So we could certainly shoot for those nights, August 5th.
So August 5th and August 19th.
August 19th.
For strategic planning.
Yes.
And those will just subsume our regular city council meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
And if we have some business we must take care of, we'll put 30 minutes into those time blocks, and we'll just do that quickly.
And I think maybe we could look into maybe August 9th for a party at the golf course on that Saturday where we play golf.
Yeah, sure.
And it doesn't have to be full. I mean, something. TrackMan, or we could do best ball. We'd do something fun. Anyway, we could actually play golf.
I'll just drive the cart.
Tyler's over there going, now that's my prime time, Saturday in August. Don't.
That's true.
You know, and we can also do what my mother would want us to do, and that is work first and then go to the driving range at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, with the lights. We could
always do your work first, then play.
And along those lines, we need to schedule something in the winter and try out that stuff. So.
Okay, that's all I had, Mayor. Thanks.
Okay. Todd, do you have anything?
No, Mayor.
I just had a couple of things. As you're probably aware, we're building a new sewer plant at the North plant. And yeah, you ought to drive out and look at the thing. It's amazing what you can do for $85 million. but something that kind of came up at our last meeting that was kind of interesting, as we're trying to project what new things they're going to throw at us, and they just tighten up everything, basically this $85 million plan is because we needed to take ammonia levels from 0.04 to 0.02 or something, they are going to do a study about the possibility of, in a money-saving situation, rather than try to upgrade the south plant at all, to actually shut it down and pump everything north. And before you get too excited, we still have the resource recovery facility there, so it's not like that land would open up and become developable, but But kind of an interesting concept that we may actually shut the south plant down in the future. The next item, and I just closed it, so. Or deleted it, maybe. well, I'll go from memory. I think it's House Bill 48, maybe. It deals with, obviously, wildfires have become a big concern after Hawaii and California. And so they've created a map, and it's not official yet, but I've seen it. And Suzette, you're nodding your head. Yes, you're in. You're going to get assessed. There's clauses in it that say an insurance company has to demonstrate why it's raising rates or why it's dropping. Anyway, anything above, I think it was, you're actually on the wrong side of Eaglewood Loop. If you were on the other side of the street, you maybe would be out of the range. But there's a lot of impact here. And it's coming, I think.
They still have a long way to go on that bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's all I have, I think. Anything else?
Sorry, I went ahead of you. I thought it was my turn.
You know, I just thought you had something you were going to add. But we've been out of order all night, so
I just plowed ahead. No. Sorry about that.
No.
I'd like to know, I'm going to ask the city attorney whether or not this is something to discuss in a closed session. This regarding the Utah Homeless Shelter. And the way I'm looking at it is it's possible it's dealing with real estate, land values, and transactions based on what we would discuss. And it's not reasonably imminent litigation, but there is always the option of an injunction that we could seek. And so I'm going to make a motion that we go into closed session, of course, subject to your second and vote.
I'll second if there's no concern from the city attorney.
Well, we need to state an explicit purpose for going to closed session, correct?
Yeah, and I think the purpose I heard Council Member Watts-Baskin state was discussions relating to the way the statute reads is the acquisition or disposition of real property.
So I don't know what I don't know, but I thought that the conversation was about land outside of our municipality.
Yeah, but we still could acquire that land.
Okay, I gotcha. All right.
Is it part of Salt Lake? Currently, it is unincorporated.
Is it still unincorporated? I think Sharon.
Yes, we think it's still unincorporated.
Okay.
So we have a second.
I'll second it.
Okay. Let's do roll call. Danny?
Aye.
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 Okay, we're in closed session.
Not so fast. Okay. We are in closed session. We have to be ready.